Calling out of the case of Blair against Tate. Counsel, please come to the council table. Your argument from petition.
May it please the court, Mr. George W. Erland, present argument from petition.
Your Honor, this matter arose from a probate matter in Collin County, Texas. It began when a claim was rejected, which claim was filed by the respondent to Unemployment Compensation Commission of the State of Texas. The party that denied or rejected the claim is the successor administrator who was appointed by the Collin County Court when the Collin County Court removed a very unfaithful prior appointee who had mismanaged the state tremendously. I have asked to sit at council table with me an attorney at law through the court. He's enrolled before this court, who Judge White appointed to be that successor administrator. Mr. Blair, as I said, was presented with a claim by the Unemployment Compensation Commission that grew out of the prior unauthorized activity of that prior appointee, who paid salaries to himself with court funds without authority, who operated a business without authority, and obviously, from such records as the successor has been able to pick up, he didn't pay the Unemployment Compensation Commission. So when that claim was submitted, it was rejected. About 7 months later, from June, January, state filed a suit here in Travis County based on pleadings asking for a money judgment against the administrator of a pending estate, obtained a judgment in Judge Matthews' court here, money judgment against the administrator of that pending estate, which judgment did two things. Number one, it completely ignored Rule of Civil Procedure 313, Old 222 and predecessors, didn't certify it back to the probate court, and specifically ordered execution to issue. That's the judgment in the case that we have before us. Well, of course, Your Honors will recognize that a claim filed in a probate proceeding is a matter, of course, that falls within the exclusive original jurisdiction of a probate court. And obviously, when that claim is rejected, the claimant who wants to prove up his claim has got to go into a court. Today, he can go into the probate court. But he can go into a court with jurisdiction to prove up that claim. After he gets that judgment, he's got more things to do. Of course, I just mentioned what the rule provides must be said in the judgment. In this case, our claimant didn't even file the judgment in the probate court for about 15 months, at which point our administrator, who was named as defendant down here, had already filed his final account, gave notice to the state of the filing of that final account. State did nothing. No objections or exceptions taken to that final account. Heard. Order of distribution entered. Within 30-day period, they did come up at that point and file, obtained from the clerk a certified copy of the judgment here in Travis County.
Counsel, let's go back prior to the judgment and
yes, tell
me what the facts were then.
Yes, sir.
There was, the state was contending that, the state was claiming that the estate owed some money.
Yes, sir.
I take it that the state made a demand upon the administrator.
Yes, sir. Liquidated claim.
And I take it that demand was denied.
Yes, Your Honor. By operation of law.
All right. There was was a claim that was made at that time.
Yes, sir.
And it's following that was when the state instituted the suit
yes,
against
sir.
This very administrator.
Yes, Your Honor.
And got a judgment.
Yes, Your Honor. Travis County.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Now, if the court please, we have Rule of Civil Procedure 313, which Your Honor will recognize as old 222. And its predecessors have been around for about almost 100 years before that. Very simple. When a probate court has exclusive jurisdiction of a matter, all matters that appertain to that estate, and of course today incident to that estate, fall within the ambit of the jurisdiction of that court. And if you go out after a rejected claim, Your Honors, and you get a judgment against the administrator in that pending estate matter, you have no choice about it. Your judgment has to certify it back to the probate court for adjournment. And specifically says, no execution shall issue on it. This is just protecting the exclusive jurisdiction of the probate court. Now, what happens, what's the result of not following the statute? What's the result? Well, you come up with a void judgment.
Let me back up 1 second.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there any cases that say who's supposed to certify?
The statute itself
shall be certified.
Shall be, that's correct.
Who's supposed to do that?
Well, the clerk perhaps. But I'm not going to worry about that point at all. It wasn't done. And if they have obtained a certified copy of a void judgment, Your Honor, it doesn't bother me one iota. Because if it was void, it wasn't any good to begin with, it can't be made any good, and the clerk's certificate on it can't make it good.
Are you assuming what you're about to need to prove that the judgment is void?
Yes, Your Honor, that's what I'm about to say right
okay,
now.
Okay, because it doesn't, you know.
You bet.
Now we have a judgment from a district court that is now fixing to become void.
Yes, Your Honor.
Help me
as a matter of fact, Your Honor, I'll admit, it starts off with jurisdiction of the party. It starts off with jurisdiction of the subject matter. It starts off with jurisdiction over the person.
What else do you need?
Now, here's what we need. In my brief, let's start off with the most recent case, Phillips Petroleum.
First tell me what's the need, and then tell me what the case is.
Yes. A judgment which does not certify a judgment against administrator or pending estate, which does not certify that judgment back to the probate court for adjournment and orders any kind of execution on it, is void. Now, let's talk about Supreme Court of Texas. I've cited three cases by the Supreme Court in my brief. Let me call your attention to this fact. My application contains an 18-page brief. It contains every authority that I have, I'm going to cite and mention here. In the case of Porter versus Sweeney, Justice Staten, who later became Chief Justice, said, the court in rendering that judgment has no power to do anything else except to certify it back to the probate court. No power. That's what we're talking about. No power. We're not talking about the beginning. We're not talking about any errors or mistakes during the trial. We're talking about at the end. The court has no power to do anything but to certify it back to probate court for adjournment. And no execution shall issue, and Chief Justice State said this, and I have cited it in my brief. If the court does, this came out of Bell County, in Myers versus Epton, he says, if the court does anything other than certify it back, and any kind of execution issue, beyond the power of the court to do, and he says, quote, that judgment is not even admissible in another proceeding. That's where you find your void judgment. Recently, and I cited it, Phillips Petroleum case, trespass tri-title, a judgment out of Brazoria County, in the Galveston court, but a judgment out of Brazoria County was offered as a link in the chain of title. The judgment of Brazoria County was, incidentally, by the state, was for taxes against the estate of S.R. Baring, I believe his name was, administrator. And the judgment didn't certify it back, and the judgment ordered execution. Galveston Court held, very specifically, in my brief on page 9, I quote it, the Brazoria Court was without power and lacked jurisdiction to do anything else except to certify that judgment back. And in ordering execution, it became void and subject to collateral attack. That Supreme Court has said that again. Justice Gaines, he later became Chief Justice. I'm talking about three cases of Turner Century. That the court that has a rejected claim involving the administrator has no choice but to enter a judgment certifying it back to the probate court. Now that's a distinction that I'm glad the court has asked me about, because when you talk about jurisdiction, you can have jurisdiction of the person, subject matter, but you've got to have power of the court to enter the particular type of judgment which the court enters. And that's what our courts have said will make a judgment void and subject to collateral attack. Now, there's another result that comes from not having a judgment that provides on its face certified back to probate court. It happened in this case. Apparently the creditor didn't think he had to do anything else. He did nothing. Well, here's a judgment. Judge Matthews entered it. I'm not going to go outside the record and tell you why, but I can suspect why. Somebody didn't carefully brief the law or call his attention to the fact of the nature of the case. That's obvious. Very confident trial judge down here. No one called his attention to the nature of the case. No one called his attention to Rule 313. No one told him there was a case against the administrator. I feel sure of that. That's outside the record. But be that as it may, that's what happened. Sure. Anyhow, a year goes by. Now let's get this going. Let's go 2 days after the judgment. Judgment is signed and entered down here. Copy of it, not certified copy, but a copy of it is sent to our administrator's office. And remember, he's attorney of record down here also. He looks at that judgment. This is in the record. He realizes that it's a type of judgment which has been held to be void, not certified back to probate court for observance. It orders execution. What does Mr. Administrator do? At that point, nothing. 1 year goes by, state itself done nothing. He files a final account. He gives written notice. State Exhibit 3, if you please. Written notice for the filing of that final account. Nothing comes from the state on that. They're just sitting back. He goes, the administrator goes down the morning of the hearing, looks, no objections and exceptions filed. Court hears the matter, approves the final account, orders partition and distribution. Now, about 2.5 weeks later, during the 30-day period that probate judge had jurisdiction yet of his order, they come in and obtain a certified copy from the clerk down here, obviously, file it in Collin County. This is interesting. Do nothing. File it with the court. For the first time with the court now. And the rule says it be filed with the court. It doesn't say you file a copy with administrator. Claim is something else. But judgment, statute says you shall file it with the court. Now, within the 30-day period, sit back and do nothing. They don't bring any motion to set aside the previous order of the court ordering approval of the final account, partisan distribution. They sit back and they wait for 2 more months. And then bring the motions which are denied in this case. At that point, 90 days later, 2 motions, one to adjudicate claim based upon, of course, the judgment here in Travis County that they filed up there, as I told you. And secondly, for priority over every other thing is in the final account. Now we're down to the last point. and that is 318, Probate Code 318. It talks about the administrator cannot allow, nor can the court, allow a claim that's filed after the order of partition and distribution. I'll say it again. The court cannot, the administrator cannot allow a claim. Remember, it hadn't been established yet. They got a judgment, they haven't brought it to the probate court. And I say to the Lord, but they haven't filed it there, and the court cannot allow anything filed after order of partition and distribution. Now, that brings me to a discussion of two cases by my, I'll say my favorite Supreme Court judge of recent years, Justice Earl C. Walker. States going to rely on.
The rest of us are offended.
You beg your pardon?
The rest of us are offended.
Your Honor, may I say that I haven't had the pleasure of appearing before any member of this court before.
Earl didn't sit by himself.
Go ahead.
Your Honor, that was a poor choice of words on my part. But I do respect Justice Earl C. Walker for his thorough opinion. And when he wrote them, in the probate area particularly, they were thorough. The state's going to rely on Chisholm versus Beulie Mill.
Now, who wrote that?
Justice Earl C. Walker. He wrote it right at the time that the probate code was coming in, but that didn't make any difference. He wrote an opinion where they were raising the question on the 30-day requirement. And he said specifically, and I love it, this court holds.
Maybe you need to roll up here and vote for you.
Your Honor, I'm sorry, but if I appreciate what some careful judge says, forgive me for if I'm over-exuberant. But here's what he said, and I quote it in my brief. We hold that the failure to file that judgment in 30 days is not fatal to an otherwise valid judgment. Not fatal to an otherwise valid judgment. But get this. Read his opinion real closely. All of it. And what does he say? It's not fatal if you don't file it in 30 days. But don't wait until after the order of partition and distribution. He told you. Don't wait until after the order of partition and distribution. Because if you do, you're limited specifically to proceeding against the distributees of that estate. Now, if I may, I quoted in my brief, but since this court granted the writ of error on a point of duty, I must say that I will stand or fall upon what that same Justice Walker said 8 years later in Russell versus Dobbs. Russell versus Dobbs was one where he was construing the same statute. And he was construing the 90-day provision of that statute, which says, of course, after rejected claim, you file a suit in 90 days. It wasn't done in that case. He was construing, you shall file within 90 days or be barred. And that's exactly what Justice Walker held. So with the same claim statute, you see, the shall over here on 30 days, he says, that's not mandatory. But the 90 days over here on filing suit is mandatory. Now, the last point. On duty. That opinion of Justice Walker very clearly says, in a case where there are jury findings of actual affirmative fraud on the administrator's attorney. I'll run that by again. The claimant says he didn't file it in 30 days because of fraud practiced upon him that made him delay. Justice Walker didn't condone that fraud. But he said loud and clear, the duty is upon the creditor and claimant to take every step necessary to protect his claim, notwithstanding. So, I submit, Your Honor, at this point, I haven't used all my time. I hope I've made the points clear. And unless this honorable court has some question of me,
counsel,
I'm going to conclude my...
I do.
Yes, Your Honor.
It bothers me a little bit that we go to the courthouse and get a final judgment against the very man who says, you didn't file a claim with me. as the statute provides. It bothers me that here's a man who knows it's been tested in court and he was there defending it. And then we say that the plaintiff can't recover. What would be served that wasn't adequately served by the administrator having full knowledge of the existence of this judgment? Surely the county court would not retry the case, would they?
The county court?
Could the county court review the district court's final judgment? The probate court?
The probate court. Your Honor, let's see if I answer this correctly. A claim was, of course, presented. A liquidated claim was presented to the administrator. It was rejected. Suit filed here in Travis County. Citation. No question about it. Personal jurisdiction obtained. Mr. Administrator testified, and I believe this may answer the question. If I'm administrator of an estate, and I'm looking at a claim that hadn't been proven up, hadn't been taken the steps that the law requires be taken, comes up with a judgment which the Supreme Court on three occasions has said is void, the Galveston Court of Civil Appeals says is void, and other text writers say it's void, I believe as administrator, as a duty that I owe as administrator, I'm not going to include that in my final account. I honestly feel that way. I have a duty to honor what I believe to be a valid claim, a valid judgment. But I don't think so. I have a duty to recognize a void judgment.
Now, is it the fact that this judgment contained the extra word for which let execution issue that makes it void?
Two parts, sir. That's one of them. That's
right,
one
now,
of them.
Now, why couldn't that be treated as surplus?
No, that's exactly. That's exactly what Justice Stevens of the Dallas Court of Appeals said. Treated as surplus. We're talking about a probate case. Now, Your Honor, if I sue counsel over here for debt in his individual capacity, I don't have to ask for execution. I just may want to stop the running limitations. Execution being no part of my judgment. But if I sue him in the representative capacity as administrator of a pending estate, I have no choice, Your Honor.
Right.
The statute says you shall do those two things.
Neither of which was done. I'm just simply trying to find out. Now, it was a mistake for the district court to put in there for which let execution issue. That was an error. Did you appeal from that?
No, Your Honor.
Well, then, is it fundamental error?
I think it gets in that error. Because
fundamental error?
Well, it's void. And a void judgment doesn't have to be appealed from, Your Honor. A void judgment doesn't have to be appealed from.
Are you taking the position that the inclusion of those words in the judgment, unattacked by appeal, is fundamental error?
Together with the failure to certify back. Now, I didn't use the word fundamental, but it's been held three times to create a void judgment. And that's my four times. Now, that's my position for
this. Well, the reason I'm interested is because if this be true, we're creating a brand new category of fundamental error.
I don't think so, Your Honor, at all. Because Justice Staten said...
Well, Justice Staten wrote before we did
right.
away with fundamental error.
Well, I understand, Your Honor. But he was talking about a judgment that the law at that point requires must be certified by and ordered execution issued. I believe that my time is gone, but Your Honor has
questions. Answer my question.
Yes, Your Honor.
We'll give you plenty of time to do that. It disturbs me to say that everything is washed out in the whole proceeding because three unnecessary words are included in the judgment. Why is it that that part cannot be the void part of the judgment and the rest of it stands? Now, I'm not talking about your position, which is a strong one, about following up making your claim in the probate court. But why do we have to render the whole judgment void because it's wrong on the enforcement of the judgment.
If Your Honor please, you will note that my attack in the probate court was collateral attack, you see. Now, if the court down here in Austin, any court, has before something where there's a mistake in evidence or pleadings or motions or anything like that, yes, that should be properly corrected by appeal or bill of review. I agree with it 100%. But if that judgment on its face, now that's what we're talking about here, this judgment on its face, Your Honor, not in the back of the record, but on its face, shows that the judgment disregards the specific directions of a statute.
Well, that's error.
Well, I think it's more than error. It's not just the ordinary error that a judge may commit that can be appealed from and corrected. Now, as I say, if the state wants to correct that, that's fine. That's their business. But that's exactly what Mr. Administrator's position was, Your Honor. He says, I think that I'd be entitled to notice if they try to correct that judgment.
Well, let me ask you this. We have a judgment which says let execution issue.
Yes,
it's on attack, on appeal from.
I agree with you.
Keep the state from issuing execution under that
judgment
now.
Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. And let me, I hope I answer you, but let me put it this way. A very respected writer on the matter of judgment, Justice Freeman, who pointed out, you've got to have jurisdiction of the person, you've got to have jurisdiction of the subject matter or the race, and you've got to have power of the court to enter the type of judgment which it enters. Lacking any of these three, you make your judgment void and subject to collateral attack. And the rest of his quotation is very simple. I can't use his Latin language, and I won't try to. But he says, it never was anything, it never will be anything, and it can't be the basis of a valid claim. I have more than used up my time, Your Honor.
No, sir, you haven't. It goes until it gets read.
I'm delighted that it's be able to...
Well, doesn't the probate code itself say that no execution shall issue on a judgment rendered in a due course of administration on a claim that has been rejected? The statute itself provides that no execution shall ever issue.
Your Honor, you're correct. Absolutely. That's probate code 313, not to be confused with Rule of Civil Procedure 313. There we got it twice in the statute. Twice. In the claim statute, no execution shall issue. It shall be certified by. That's what Justice Walker was talking about. That part of it. No execution shall issue. And I bet you, I don't want to bet. But if execution had issued in that case, Justice Walker wouldn't have said what he said.
You don't stand to get Walker.
Please, Your Honor. Well, as I say, I will stand or fall upon his analysis of...
Counsel, there were eight other judges on that court. Wasn't that the court's decision?
Of course, Your Honor.
Decision?
I am insulting this court, and I'm embarrassed.
We're not insulting.
I appreciate a good opinion, is what I'm saying, Your Honor. I appreciate a good opinion, and I abhor a lousy one, and forgive me for saying it. That's what we have in the Court of Appeals in this case. For the first time that I know of, a mandatory statute that says you shall do something and you shall not do something is perfect. Forgive me for making a jury argument. Now, there is a brilliant opinion. I respectfully request that this court reverse that opinion and affirm the trial court's opinion in a non-jury trial where you must affirm his judgment if there's any legal basis for doing it. I'll even call your attention to the fact that the state didn't even file that claim until well after the 90 days down here. Unfortunately, that's the kind of error, Your Honor, that would have to be raised by appeal, of course. They didn't even file their claim within the mandatory 90-day provision following rejection.
Did you object to that?
It wasn't objected to, of course not. It should have. If it had been on appeal, of course it wouldn't. If you'd gone the appeal route. That's the kind of error that the opinion of Justice Stevens in this case says, errors of the court, I forget the exact language, but errors of the court do not necessarily render that judgment void. Of course. And then he goes on and says other things, but I'd agree with him on that general proposition. I agree with him. I'm in the position of having to, I've used up my time completely now.
Yes,
here I am agreeing with Your Honor.
You've used up your time.
Your Honor, forgive me for taking too much time.
Thank you, Counselor. Any arguments from the respondent?
May I please the court, Mr. Ben Harrison will present argument for respondent.
May I please the court, this is a tax suit filed by the state of Texas against the administrator of the estate of Bobby Joe Hobson, deceased. The state obtained a judgment for taxes against the administrator in the 200th District Court of Travis County, Texas. It is true that at the end of the judgment, there are these form words, for which let execution issue. Now, counsel for the administrator has contended all along that the judgment is void because those words are in the judgment. As I understand the law and as the Court of Appeals held and as the state has set forth in its brief, those words are mere surfaces and do not mean the actual execution of getting out an execution, having the sheriff go out and levy on the estate, but simply mean let the judgment be enforced. Now, after the state secured its judgment against administrator for taxes, the county probate court of Collin County, Texas, held that the judgment was void and subject to collateral attack. The Dallas Court of Appeals held that the county court was in error. The judgment was a valid judgment, not subject to collateral attack. That the state's judgment was timely filed, and that the administrator was under duty to call the attention of the court. The county probate court to the judgment of the state whenever it was material to any action by the probate court. The administrator filed an application for a writ of error. In it he made 4 points. The first one was that the state's judgment was void and subject to collateral attack. His second point was that the state's judgment was not timely filed in the probate court. His third point was that the state's judgment was not timely presented to the probate court. And his fourth point was that the administrator was not under duty to call the attention of the state's judgment to the probate court. This court granted the writ of error on points 2 and 4. Point number 2 being whether or not the state's judgment was timely filed in the probate court. And point 4 being whether or not the administrator was under duty to file the state's judgment in the county probate court. Now I hasten to tell this court in response to the argument 17 and 318 of the probate code, do not have a case, and I will show the court why. Those provisions are for and apply to rejected claims against an estate, not to this case here. Rule 13 of the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure provide that no execution shall issue on a judgment against the state, but it shall be filed in the probate court. Section 313 principally provides that a judgment against an estate shall be filed with the probate code within 30 days from the date of judgment by a court of competent jurisdiction. Section 318 of the probate code provides that after an order of final distribution and petition by the probate court of an estate, that suit may not be instituted against the estate, but the claimant may proceed against the heirs and distributees of the estate. Those provisions do not apply in this case at all. The state filed suit, the state of Texas filed suit against the estate of Bobby Joe Hobson, deceased. Bobby Joe Hobson died on January the 19th, 1975. According to the death certificate on page 4 of the transcript in the record. Now, he was a master plumber. He was in the plumbing business, contracting, construction business. His business continued after his death by the temporary administrator. Really long after Hobson's death, there were taxes incurred under Article 5221B owed to the Texas Employment Commission, the Unemployment Compensation Act, on wages paid by the administrator after the death of Bobby Joe Hobson, deceased. This was not a claim, a rejected claim, as spoken of in those provisions mentioned by counsel for the administrator. It was a suit for taxes owed to the state by the administrator on wages paid by the administrator. So the state wrote a demand letter to the administrator for payment of those taxes to the Texas Employment Commission after the Texas Employment Commission were unable to collect those taxes. No response. So the state filed its suit according to Article 5221B in the 200th District Court of Travis County, Texas, against the administrator. The administrator filed a general denial. Statute says, unless they file a sworn answer, they can't defend. Then the administrator called me by telephone. It's on page 7 of the statement of facts, and he said, look, I'm not going to oppose your suit for taxes against the estate. Send me a copy of the judgment. On April 17, 1978, the District Court of Travis County, Texas, rendered a judgment in behalf of the state against the administrator for those taxes, and the judgment is before the court as a visual aid. It's in the record, pages 56 through 58, I believe. 2 days later, the state sent a letter to the administrator enclosing the judgment to the administrator as he was requesting. No response. The state filed the judgment in the probate court of Collin County, Texas, never attempted to get out any execution, have the sheriff levy execution on the estate, but filed the judgment with the probate court. Now, I believe it was in June of 1980 that the administrator filed what he calls his final account. Then he brings in Section 318 of the probate court. probate code. Excuse me. That was no final account. 1 year later, after the court had entered an order stating that after the administrator had set aside the assets to the creditors, the administrator could report back to the court, and the court would then approve a final account. Now, 3 years, now the state's judgment was final 30 days after April the 19th, 1978. The administrator did not appeal. He did not file a motion for a new trial. The judgment became final.
It became final in April 78.
Well, I'd say May the 19th. The judgment was April the 19th, and 30 days after would be May the 19th, I believe.
And then when was the file? I missed the day it was filed in the probate record.
Well, and actually filed by the state, it was 1980, I believe. But it was 2 days later, after the judgment, that the judgment was delivered by mail to the administrator. Now, 3 months, I beg your pardon, 3 years and 3 months after the state's judgment became final, the county probate court of Collin County decided he would take jurisdiction of the case. He set a hearing. No final order had been entered. The county court set a hearing and held the hearing in McKinney, Texas, in the courthouse in the probate court. There, the county court, after a brief file by both parties, entered an order dated July 6, 1981, and the order is attached to the judgment, the state's judgment, as a visual aid in this case. Now, in that order by the Collin County Court, he said that I'm going to reopen the case. The administrator never was an employee. He was not an employing unit. He never owed any taxes. He reopened the case 3 years after the judgment became final, and he held that the administrator did not overstate any taxes, and furthermore, that as the statute requires for those taxes, the administrator was not an employing unit and not an employer. And he further held the state's judgment was void and subject to collateral attack.
Counsel, you said this, and I apologize for not picking up. Did I understand you to say that these employment taxes or unemployment taxes, no part of them arose during the life of Bobby Joe, whatever his name was?
That is right, Your Honor. Bobby Joe Hobson died on January the 1975.
These and the taxes business was continued by the administrator?
Right, yes.
And as I understood you, the trial court in Collin County said the administrator was not an employer?
Yes, sir. 3 years after the state's judgment for those taxes became final. Now, when that judgment was filed with the county probate court, the only thing the county court could do, was order the judgment classified for payment from the assets of the state, the estate. The county court exceeded his authority. He had no authority 3 years after the state's judgment became final to reopen the case and hold the judgment void and subject to collateral attack. That was a final judgment. The issues in that judgment as to whether or not the administrator was an employer and whether or not the administrator owes taxes, those issues were settled.
What was the date of the petition distribution? How does it fit into the time schedule you give us?
Well, there's been no petition and distribution. The administrator, he filed a report. He called it a final account. That was, I believe that was in June of 1980. And the order approving that said that when those assets had been set aside to the creditors of the estate, then at that time the court would approve.
Was this judgment from Travis County Court filed with the probate court before that or after that?
Well, it was filed that. Well, it was filed with the administrator well before that, and it was filed with the probate court after.
The code requires that or not that you file it with the court.
Right.
When did you file with the court? Was it after this final order was approved?
I believe it was in July of 1980.
How long after the administrator filed his report and the judge said distribute?
About a month. Now, the case of Chisholm versus Bewley Mills is an important case to be considered here. That case was decided by the Supreme Court.
Who wrote that opinion, counsel?
Your Honor, as I read the opinion, it was written by Rudy Walker. It was decided by the Supreme Court in 1956. That opinion has been the law in the state ever since and been decided, has been cited by this court and by other courts many times. In that case, the court held that the word shall, which counsel for the administrator has tried to make mandatory, according to the interpretation of legislative intent, the word shall applied as mandatory only when it was the essence of the thing to be done. Where it is the manner of procedure of how to file the claim, it's merely directed and not mandatory. Counsel for the administrator goes on to his argument before the court and cites this case with reference to suit to be filed within 90 days, or the provision provides it cannot be filed after the 90-day period. Well, there's no penalty provision like that in section 313 of the probate court. Just simply says that the judgment shall be filed within 90 days. Now the Supreme Court said in that case that is merely directory and not mandatory. And the Supreme Court also said that whenever an administrator of an estate becomes aware of a judgment that has been rendered against the estate, it is the duty of the administrator to call the attention of the court to the judgment whenever that judgment is material to any action by the court. Now, when the administrator got that judgment 2 days later after it was rendered, he never called it to the attention of the probate court. He never called it to the attention of the court when he filed his final accounting. Never said anything about it. He just put it in a drawer, filing cabinet in his office, and forgot about it. Certainly it is the position of the state that the administrator in the state of Bobby Joe Hobson is obligated to pay the taxes in the state's judgment. The Court of Appeals in that was correct in its holding, and we ask the court to affirm the judgment of the Court of Appeals.
Thank you, counsel. Your rebuttal argument from petitioner.
Last thing first. The administrator forgot about it, and the court didn't know about it.
when he filed the final account. Why was he given written notice down there? Why was he given written notice 2.5 years later? The statute just simply says the court shall give notice to whoever the court thinks should give notice. It used to be posted notice, but I mean it's a little broader. But let's clear up a sequence of things that I think maybe has been a little confusing here. We know about the claim presented. The judgment date to here in Travis County is April the 17th of 1978. Now, the 2 days later he's talking about is April the 19th, 2 days later. He sent a copy up to the administrator. Hey, look at what I got down here in Austin against you. That's the one that the administrator ignored. And I say he has a duty under the law to follow the law as announced by this Supreme Court, as well as courts of civil appeals that have recently handled. Secondly, he talked about when the order of partition and distribution was entered. Let's make it clear. The opinion has these dates in it. June the 27, 1980. Judgment back April 78. The final account, order of partition and distribution, June 1980. Now, the first time a judgment shows up in the probate court of Collin County, filed with the court, is on July 21st of 1980. I think those dates may help the court, but real quick, I'm not going to raise an issue over what the record says with reference to Mr. Blair saying, I can't be in Austin tomorrow. You read the record, that dishonest temporary administrator had attorney's records over to me. I had nothing to fight with. Now, something else that I want to be clear at this court's hearing from over here. The continuation of the business was not by this successor over here who was presented with the claim. The continuation of the business was by the dishonest, unfaithful, temporary administrator way on back in 1975 who got control of that business, who got control of those assets. And incidentally, read what Judge White put in his judgment. Our administrator chased that dishonest temporary administrator and his bonding company all the way to the steps of this Supreme Court and got an affirmed judgment against the bonding company for his dishonest acts. Now, as I say, you're not talking about anything this man did. You're not talking about anything that the court authorized this man to do. You're talking about a temporary administrator. Get this, a temporary administrator whose acts are void unless they're expressly authorized, running a business and paying salaries to himself.
Counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
We have two judgments here. The first judgment we have is by the district court.
Yes, Your Honor.
You received notice of it. You filed an answer. You agreed.
Notice of citation, of course. You said notice of the judgment. You filed an answer.
Notice of the suit.
Yes, Your Honor.
You filed an answer.
This man did. Go ahead.
The judgment was taken.
Yes, Your Honor.
Taken with knowledge.
That was set, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Then this same lawsuit was relitigated before the county court because I'm looking at the judgment.
No, Your Honor, at all. Wasn't relitigated at all.
Well, this is what the judge of Collin County said. The judgment of the 200th District Court and so forth is subject to collateral attack.
Yes, Your Honor.
Judgment ordering execution of a money judgment against the administrator and so forth is beyond the power of the court to grant.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, here we have a county court set aside the district court judgment.
Holding it void.
Now,
yes.
The next thing the county court says is J.W. Blair, administrator, and his estate were never employers or employing units under the statute.
Correct.
Well, now that's the thing that has been litigated by the district court.
If that's a valid judgment, Your Honor, I will concede.
So what we've got is the county court of Collin County setting aside a judgment of the district court.
Not setting aside, but Your Honor are correct. It's semantics, perhaps. He's holding it, not res judicata.
Well, that gives me pause because that court may do the same thing with our judgment.
Your Honor? I will submit that a void judgment, and it's in my brief, if a judgment is void for any of the reasons, including lack of power, to enter the type of judgment entered. It can be attacked in the justice court, Your Honor.
And if we, in writing this opinion at the end, instead of saying the judgment is affirmed or denied, say for what blood execution issues, this would be a void judgment?
Well, because, of course not, Your Honor. I'm trying to find the analogy, and I'm not trying to be evasive here. But, yes, the probate judge there in Collin County, he knew what had been going on up there for years. And very frankly, if he was presented with a judgment that was valid in every respect, that was res judicata, I would be first to admit that that probate judge could not, on that point, do what he did. I'd be less than candid if I didn't say that. But I don't care whether it's probate court, or another district court, or what court. If he's presented with a judgment of the type that Justice Staten said isn't even admissible in evidence, he's saying it's void, is what he's saying, collateral attack. That's what the probate court was faced with. So based upon a claim that is now based upon that judgment, the probate judge is simply saying, well, that judgment is subject to collateral attack. Look at your statute. Look at your law.
Your response to the question that yeah. I heard a moment ago about what if this court awarded interest that it should not have awarded or made some mistake about the cost, would that render the whole judgment void?
Well, Your Honor, you're a court of law. You're a court of law entirely. And your word is final on a matter of law. Now, on a matter of fact, of course, if it is litigated before a court with jurisdiction of the parties, subject matter, claim, and the court goes further and enters a valid judgment that's authorized to enter, and that's what this case is all about, Your Honor. Of course, if he followed all those things, I wouldn't stand before this court and say that that probate judge could ignore it. Well, I certainly it's raised judicata. And it would require a direct attack here in this district court in Austin, Travis County. But you don't have to directly attack a void judgment. That's why we have it.
Does that make the whole judgment void is what I was really asking.
It's not enforceable. I'm groping for words, Your Honor. But a court that tries facts, that's what the trial court tries, is facts. If those facts are litigated in a court somewhere else with jurisdiction of the person, subject matter, and then the court goes on and enters the type of judgment it could enter, let me make a way out illustration. Suppose the judge in Collin County had said, well, that darn dishonest administrator for disregarding our state taxes ought to be hung from the highest tree in Collin County. What would you think of that judgment?
You might agree with it.
You might agree with it. If you were the state, you would.
Go ahead for the first.
If you were the state, you would, Your Honor. But you see my point? I hope I made my point. He doesn't have power to enter that type of judgment. That's all I'm talking about.
The bottom line, as I get it, of your entire argument is that the addition of those five words renders that judgment void.
In addition to failure to observe the mandatory further requirements. And he missed this entirely. Well, it shall be certified to the probate court for observance in accordance with law to be there. There's the person that does the executing. This may answer your question.
That's not apparent on the face of the judgment, whether or not you timely certified, is it? That would be something that's apparent on the face of the judgment, which is the test for void judgment, as I understand it.
Certification has nothing to do with avoidance of the judgment, Your Honor. Certification has absolutely nothing to do with avoidance of the judgment. If it's void, it's a nullity, you can still get the clerk to give you a certified copy of it.
I understand. Gets back to where I was a moment ago, but the reason it's void, under your argument, is the addition of those five words.
Lack of power in the court to do that, and the failure of the court to follow the mandatory requirement as to the type of judgment it must enter. Let me conclude with this.
Well, counsel, before you conclude, when we ask you a question,
sure.
Your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You can just go right on and ask.
Thank you, Your
question.
Honor. I appreciate
we're
that.
We're not squeezing you down on that. But I'm looking at this county court judgment, and this county court judgment puts its judgment on two things. One is the inclusion of these extra words in the judgment, and the other one is holding that these were not employed, that the administrator was not an employer. Those are the two things. The judgment doesn't say a word about it not being timely filed.
I agree with you, Your Honor. Now, absolutely.
This is the judgment we're reviewing.
And, Your Honor, in a non-jury judgment, before a trial judge conducting a non-jury case, where he isn't requested to file findings of fact and conclusions of law, and he makes a few findings in support of his judgment, but no one requests findings of fact or conclusions of law, no one brings a record up, what does our Supreme Court say? And I put it in the brief here. What does our Supreme Court say? That judgment must be affirmed. If it can be affirmed upon any legal basis. Now, if Judge White didn't put in all the refinements of the probate code, well, I still think he was a pretty capable judge. But he didn't have to say it was late 318 and something else. I mean, it gets the collateral attack. But as I say, he knew what had been going on up there. You can look at the record that came before this court in Law versus Blatter. He knew what was going on up there. He knew it was all doing of a dishonest administrator back before this man. So, as I say, Your Honors, you have it. I think by your questions, you have it. Just write what the issue is. I never challenged the jurisdiction of this district court down here to have heard the matter to begin with. It got jurisdiction of the parties by citation. It had a right to litigate. I'm not complaining about any mistakes made there. It may have been a perfect trial. But when it came down to the bottom line, if I can use that expression, what does Rule 301 say? That the court shall enter the type of judgment which the nature of the case and the pleadings demand. What are the pleadings in this case? Suit against administrator for money. What? All the way through, suit against administrator for money. But follow that up with Rule of Civil Procedure 313. What does the judgment have to provide? And it says loud and clear. And I must stand upon the statute, the rule, and the opinions of this honorable Supreme Court. It's so clear that when the jurisdiction of a probate court is invoked by a claim, which has excluded jurisdiction of probate court there, you follow procedure, of course. It's there. And that procedure is protected. It's protected well, even before we had a probate code and rules of procedure. You will not go out here and ignore the probate court. And if I may mention his name one more time, Justice Payton says, and you will not embarrass, pardon me if I sound like a jury argument, you will not embarrass the probate court by making such an order. And Your Honors, I'll stand on those opinions by our Supreme Court and that language. And I say I quoted it in my brief. If I'm wrong, you're going to rule against me. I realize that. But I think from your questions, you have it. I think it's clear what the decision is going to have to be. You know my position in the matter. And I appreciate the fact that you've extended my time as long as you have. But I will be candid with this court. I appreciate your questions. Your Honor, my time is gone. Any further questions? Am I excused?
Yes, sir. Your time is not gone, but you can... The blue light is a warning light. The red light is time.
Your Honor, unless you have some further question of me.
I have no further question.
I think you have the case. You have it in point. You're going to make the correct decision.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted on written briefs and oral arguments for both parties. The court will take a brief recess.